Well, you've been performing for a long time, but also you're a teacher.
Yes.
And so tell us about where you're teaching and how often you do that.
Yeah, so I'm at Hope College, and I've been there for a long time. You know, I've been fortunate over the years to work at a lot of different places, you know, some time at Grand Valley and Grace Bible College and Aquinas College and Cornerstone, but I kind of found a home at Hope College, and I've been there for about 20 years. And, you know, started part-time there, and that kind of developed into more of a full-time thing. So I had to kind of walk away from a lot of the other teaching that I was doing. Not because I didn't enjoy being at those other places, it's just that Hope ended up being kind of all-consuming in terms of my teaching world. So I teach jazz piano there, and I've also done kind of a jazz history course over the years. Also do an improv class and an arranging class. And a coach of combo. And when Brian Coyle, the head of the jazz area there, went on sabbatical, I got a chance to work with their large ensemble for a semester or two, which was a lot of fun. Composition, I guess that's kind of the gamut of what I'm doing.
That's a lot.
Well, I'll tell you, man, I mean, it's one of those things where I just really, I'm grateful to have the opportunity to do that, you know, to talk with young people. And you know how it is. I mean, you know, I'm called a teacher or professor or whatever, but it goes both ways. I'm always learning from my students or learning from the process of them asking me a question that brings to mind something I hadn't thought of, maybe not in that way before, you know, so I have to do a little research before I get back to them with an answer and, you know, and learn something, of course, myself going through that process. And, It's great. I mean, you know, like you, I just feel so fortunate to be able to make a living doing what I love. You know, how many people can say that? And I think if you can say that, I mean, that's one of the best things in life is to find a job that you love.
Yeah, I try not to take that for granted.
Yeah, man, because you're going to spend a lot of time at work.
Yeah.
So you may as well do something
and
you
so
love to do.
And so many people, they're doing things that they don't enjoy and... And it's really a privilege to play music and
definitely
and share it with people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. I mean, as a teacher, we learn so much, right?
Yeah, there are times where a student is leaving my studio and I feel like, man, I ought to write them a check, you know. We'll edit that part out. Yeah.
But it's true. We're always learning and we can never know everything.
Yeah.
I love it. Are there any certain philosophies or themes in your teaching that you try to share with your students?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think first and foremost, well, at Hope College, I'm in a situation where a lot of the students I work with are not really, you know, they're not exclusively music students. They're not music majors. You know, they're kind of from all over the campus, and that's great. You know. And I'm happy to work with anybody of any experience level. I mean, even somebody that's just starting out. But with my students that want to major in music, I just want to be sure that they are aware what they're getting into, you know, that you have to kind of really immerse yourself. I mean, music is not, it's not like a job where you just show up 9 to 5, you know. It's got to be a life-consuming endeavor. If it's not, you really should do something else with your life because there are going to be people out there that essentially want your job that do feel that way about it. And, you know, you can make a great living in music between playing and teaching and writing. And if you love it enough, you will. But if you don't feel that way, if it doesn't consume you, you know, if you don't feel like that's why you're on this earth, I think you're going to have a hard go of it, you know? Yeah, so that's one thing. Just having that passion and trying to, hopefully they come with that passion there, but, you know, helping to fan those flames and keep that alive, you know? And as, you know, again, also then walking that tightrope between feeling confident in what you're doing, but also having the humility to... be open for improvement and growth.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you have to. The word I've been using with my students is obsessed.
Obsessed,
exactly.
You have
to be obsessed with the instrument and the music, or else it's going to be really tough, you know? And I know Billy Hart would say that, you know, if you have other choices, you know, you should choose those.
Yeah.
You know, if you only do music if it's the only thing you can see yourself doing.
Right.
I mean, you can have other talents, but
oh, sure.
You know, it's not like it's the only thing you can do, so
you'll have to
do that. Yeah, but it's the only thing you see yourself doing, and it's just an obsession. And, and then you see people like Billy Hart that, well, it's clearly an obsession for him, you know, and so many others. So it's something else to strive for, to just keep, you know, fanning our own flames, you know.
Absolutely.
And doing the teaching and just talking to each other like this, you know, we inspire each other.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
Ah, this is great. Well, let's hear some more music. What else do you have today?
So this next one I called Sacred Gifts, and there's kind of a story behind this. A number of years ago, I was asked to play some jazz at a mass, a Catholic mass. And so we just took some of the hymns that they would normally do on that Sunday, but just played them kind of in a jazz style. And then along with this, then, there was the opportunity to write a little bit of original music. And this is one of the things I wrote for kind of a meditation portion of the Mass, where the bread and wine are brought to the altar. They call it, you know, presenting the gifts. And so I call the tune Sacred Gifts. But musically, where it stems from is my wife and I were in Traverse City, where we love to go, you know, in the summer. And we were kind of in one of these gift shops, and they had these wind chimes, and there were five wind chimes there hanging, you know. And the scale that those chimes played to me was so evocative, you know, of, I don't know, just hearing those, that particular scale just brought up all these emotions somehow.
Wow.
And so these are the notes. You know, so it's those five notes. And so I played them, and I kind of figured out what the scale was and memorized it. You know, I thought, oh, man, I've got to use that somehow. So I came home and wrote this tune, Sacred Gifts, and it later found its way into this Mass. And it's also on one of the records we did. It's on June Balloon, which was a trio album I recorded with Andy Zamowski on drums and Tom Lockwood on bass.
Thank you.
Sacred Gifts, Steve Talaga, and that is from your album June Balloon, right?
June Balloon, that's right.
Yep. What does that mean, June Balloon?
It's just something that rhymes, you know? We recorded it in May of that year, whatever year that was, I don't know, a few years back, and did kind of the mixing down in June and sort of put the final, you know, icing on the cake in June. So I just thought, it was such a fun album, you know, for me to do. And all original tunes, you know, and it's always a blast working with Andy and Tom. I mean, they're just crazy talented musicians, and we just had such a ball. And the music stylistically is kind of all over the place. You know, there's some stuff on there with electric keyboards, some other stuff with more kind of an acoustic sound. And it was just like a party, really. I mean, we did it in two sessions, you know, the recording, and then mixed down took, you know, of course, several more. It was just a lot of fun, so I just called it June Balloon.
Right, yeah. I like it. Yeah. I mean, it does rhyme. It rolls off your tongue, and balloon, right. You've got the party atmosphere. So,
and I have to be honest, I sort of stole the idea a little bit from back when I was at CMU in that band Studio 12, one of their jazz ensembles. They did an original tune by somebody. I can't even remember, I'm sorry to say, who wrote it, but the album was called Noon Balloon, because the band always met at noon, you know.
Aha.
Or not the album, but I mean that tune was called Noon Balloon. So I thought, I don't know, I stole the idea.
Well, June was appropriate.
June Balloon, yeah. It's different a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
it's fun. Noon. Yeah, Andy Zamowski and Tom Lockwood, I mean, they're amazing musicians and so versatile.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, that really comes to the fore on that record. You know, they're playing all different kinds of styles, and Tom's playing some acoustic bass and some electric bass. Of course, he's a great horn player too, as you know.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, he played on my album Shapeshifter. He played saxophone and flute, you know, and just tore it up. So
yeah, when Tom's on the gig, you're not really sure what he's going to show up.
Exactly.
With.
Well, and he'll often send an email note saying, "Just to confirm, am I on bass tonight?" Or, you know. Horn or, you know, which is it?
Whatever you need, I'm there.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, he's great. And another guy like that we both get to work with is Rob Smith.
Rob Smith, absolutely.
Recorded, you know, when I met Rob, he was playing electric bass in a big band. And then the next gig, someone said, yeah, Rob Smith's on it. And I said, the bass player? And they said, no, the saxophonist. I said, really? So he played saxophone on the gig. And then the next time I met him, he was playing trumpet.
Played trumpet, right. Right.
So.
And that's only what we usually see from him. I mean, you know, he also plays, I mean, he plays everything. I'm kind of like, I just hope he never sits down at the piano when I'm there, you know, because he's a great piano player too, and a great, plays violin of all things, and guitar. And,
keep him away from the drums.
Yeah, no doubt. He plays, he's a great drummer
yeah,
too,
sure
as a matter of
he
fact.
Is.
I've heard him do that. Yeah,
he's remarkably talented.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talent in Michigan.
So true. And, I mean, you know, so many guys... Well, like you, you know, moved to New York, and there was a part of me that always kind of wanted to do that, but, man, I've been perfectly happy here. I mean, you know, I'm working, I have to turn work away, you know, there's too much, too much work, but I mean, you know, more than I could possibly do, and it's always with such great players, and you know, we get a chance from time to time, thanks to in a lot of cases, the colleges and high schools in the area that sponsor jazz concerts, we get a chance to play with some really well-known players on occasion, too. So I'm perfectly happy here in West Michigan. It's very, very fertile ground.
Yeah, and you perform frequently at the Grand Rapids Jazz Festival,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And that happens in the summertime.
In the summertime, usually in August. They call it the Grand Jazz Fest.
Yeah. Right. So tell me about your family. I know that your kids are musicians, too.
They are, yeah. My son right now, excuse me. My son is living in Holland, and he has played, you know, throughout his life. He started on French horn, of all things, when he was just a little kid, and was playing it well, then switched to trumpet, and he thought, and, you know, he said to me, he said, man, trumpet's so easy, you know, compared to French horn. And he played great, you know, in the school bands and stuff, and then he ended up being the drum major in his high school band for a couple of years at the end there, his junior and senior year. And learned a lot from that experience, conducting that marching band, you know, and leading that ensemble. And then went to Hope College and started studying music there, and he drifted more toward composition. Man, he has written some amazing music. He actually studied composition there with me. And it was one of those things where he'd come in and for his lesson, and I would just say to him, great, just keep going. You know, I mean, there was like very little for me to tell him or teach him, quote unquote. I mean, he came in like this fully formed thing, wrote this like half hour long string quartet one semester. He wrote some stuff for orchestra and then also was focusing on playing mandolin with some of their folk ensembles there. But since then, he's kind of gravitated also toward jazz guitar. So I'm starting to do some gigs with him now, which is a thrill, my son Steven. That's great, you know. And then our daughter Lauren, she went to school at University of Miami down in Florida for a music business degree and moved out to L.A., and she's living there now working for Warner Music Group, helping them with, among other things, I guess, distribution and artist, you know, A&R stuff. So,
wow. Yeah. Maybe she can help us out.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying not to, you know, like...
Don't forget you know, who raised you.
Right, exactly. Right. I'm very careful not to, like, bring that up and say, hey, don't forget about your old man, you know, maybe, you know, wonder...
Hey, honey, so, I got a new record out.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, I'm trying not to go there. No.
So what was that like teaching Steve in private lessons? I don't think that would work with many... kids.
Well, and I don't know, for us or for me at least, and I'm assuming for him, it seemed to be a great, great relationship, you know. In the studio, it was just, like I said, he would come in every week with just reams of music, you know, and I never really had to, maybe one or two times, you know, when he'd come in a week or two in a row and there wouldn't be a ton of progress, you know, I'd say, hey, you know, remember by the end of the semester, you've got to have a full piece. And, you know, I'd say, why this week wasn't there quite as much as that you don't know what to do? He said, no, I just didn't have enough time this week to really. And by the next week, he'd come in and have a whole, you know, bunch more done. So it really was mostly us just kind of looking over and listening to his music and me just asking him questions about his approach and kind of where he's coming up with his ideas, how he's thinking about developing, you know, the germ of the composition, how he's working. And his style of writing, his process, I should say, seems to be one that's just very intuitive. You know, he has such this great instinct for writing that he would just kind of go along on his own intuition and not approach things, you know, the way some, especially more modern composers, oftentimes will use certain mathematical kind of elements or take small themes or motives and, you know, build these syllabus of cells that they can use in there, you know, and he would never get kind of into that aspect of the detail. He would just churn out this stuff that just sounded very natural and wonderful and had a lot of integrity. And so it was a real joy. And some of the time, you know, he'd write something and it would remind me a little bit of some other composer. And so maybe part of the lesson we'd spend listening to someone else's music that seemed to kind of resonate, you know, with or go along with what he had been working on.
I love what you said. You mentioned that you were asking him questions about his music.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And, you know, I mean, a lot of teachers, sometimes it's easy to get into just telling the students things, right? This is what you should do. This is what you should do. And it's a great reminder for me as a teacher to hear you say that, because it's important, that we find out where they're coming from.
Sure.
You know?
Well, for me, this is particularly true with composition students. I don't want them to write my music, you know? I want to, if they come in and they've been able to churn out stuff in it and it sounds good and seems to have, you know, this integrity, I tend to just kind of try to stay out of their way, really. And maybe, again, maybe it'll spark a thought of maybe someone else's music that sounds similar to that, or and so we'll do some listening or something. But if they're churning along and really writing great music, a lot of times I'll tend to stay out of the way. The kinds of things I tend to be with those students on the lookout for are if they're writing, say, for saxophone and they're writing something that's out of the range, or, you know, not like I play every instrument, but I'm always on the lookout for things that maybe seem like they're not idiomatic for an instrument or would be impossible to play. Like if you're doing a lot of real fast, you know, intervallic leaps and stuff for trombone or something like that, that, you know, I mean, that of course a masterful virtuoso trombonist probably will be able to pull it off, but I'll mention something and I'll say, well, you know, this part looks like it may not fit that well with trombone. I said, you know, one of the things you can do is, you know, talk to a trombonist, ask him to play it, see if you like the way that sounds. those sorts of things. Where I tend to make suggestions, specific suggestions, musical suggestions to composition students is if they come in and they say, I just don't know what to do, or I'm kind of stuck or whatever, then I'll suggest some things. But if a student, I'm always on the lookout for, I try to get a sense of what's this universe that they're creating. And if they do something that doesn't seem to fit in to that world they're creating in some way, I'll point that out to them, you know, and I'll say, hey, this seems to me like it doesn't fit. Can you tell me why you did this particular thing here? And if they have a good reason, like if they're saying, oh yeah, I know it doesn't fit, I really wanted something kind of like a lightning bolt from out of the blue, then I'll say, well, okay, you know, I just wanted to point out that it doesn't seem to fit in, but in the end, if you feel it really needs to be there, this is your piece, and you can, you know, you can leave it.
Yeah. Wow, that's wonderful. Well, speaking of composition, I know you have a couple of new tunes that you mentioned that you haven't even recorded yet.
Yeah, so let's see. This next one is, it's a 12-bar blues, and I called it spiky because the melody is kind of real angular and, you know, spiky.
The soulful Mr. Talaga. Yeah, man. I like that tune. It's spiky.
Well, thanks. Spiky. Yeah.
So between all the tunes that you've played today that you composed, uh-huh. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of different influences in there. I'm just curious, you know, just a question. If you could play with anyone living today,
yeah,
who's the first person that comes to mind?
Oh, it'd be Herbie Hancock. Yeah, no question. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I'd be terrified to do so. You know, and not worthy. You know, but at the same time, I mean, if I had to pick like one person that I look up to as a musician, especially living musician, it would have to be Herbie. You know,
the dual
and,
piano.
And man, if I had a chance to play one on one with him. That would be the thing. You know, I did get a chance to play with another one of my real heroes, Chick Corea. I had the opportunity to go to a music camp, I guess you'd say. It was like a 4-day thing. And he was there with Antonio Sanchez and John Patitucci. And we just hung out with his trio for, you know, almost a full, four full days. And there were only about 22 or 23 of us that had gone to this thing. It was in Connecticut, I think, or Massachusetts somewhere, you know, up in the Adirondacks, I guess. And anyway, toward the end of the week, we each got a chance to sit down and play either with just Chick or with any of the guys in the trio. So, of course, I asked to play one of my tunes with their trio. So I gave them each a chart, and we sat down and played it. And it was a thrill, man. And they actually recorded it. And send us a CD later. Of course, we had to sign something saying we wouldn't release it or use it, you know. Right. So I can talk about it, but I can't, I can't play it here. But that was just such a thrill, and he was so cool, so encouraging, and just it was great. Yeah.
So you want to play with Herbie? You have played with Chick,
right?
All right. So those are two piano players.
Yeah.
What about other instrumentalists that you could play with?
Yeah. Well, George Garzón, the sax player, somebody I would love to play with. I don't know. And I mean, like we were saying, I mean, I have gotten to play with a lot of them. They didn't call me and hire me, you know, but I've gotten to play with a lot of them because of, you know, when a school or something brings them to town, I'll often get a chance to do that, to play with them.
Yeah, it's a nice perk.
It is a nice perk, yeah.
Folks come through and they call you.
And fortunately, it usually goes pretty well. I mean, most of them seem to be really great guys and women and encouraging and, you know, with a few rare exceptions, it always has turned out really well. So that's been a thrill.
That's awesome. Well, I think we have time for one more tune. But
all right, yeah.
Before we get into that, I just want to let folks know that they can find you on the internet at stevetalaga.com.
Exactly.
And, you know, you're on YouTube, your music is on CD Baby, Reverb Nation, SoundCloud. But if you just go to stevetalaga.com, everything is there.
Yeah, there are links to all of that other stuff you just mentioned.
And
yeah.
You can read more about you. And
my calendar's there, you know, for gigs and that kind of thing.
Yeah, they can come hear you live and meet you and tell you how great you sounded on the radio.
Oh, man. Well, this has been such a thrill, Keith, I can't tell you.
Likewise. Thanks, thank you for the private concert. It's
been
wonderful.
Pleasure. So I'm going to close here with, this is probably the newest thing I've written, just a couple of weeks old. I was talking earlier about Keith Jarrett, and this one to me, again, you know how when you sit down to write, you never know what's going to come out, and this just sort of did. One day I sat down, just started messing around, and this started coming out, and I thought, man, this sounds like a tune, so I'll write it down. And It has a lot of country western influence. Not that I listen to much of that music, but I have a great respect for, especially the older style country stuff, you know, and bluegrass and all of that. And Keith Jarrett, you know, I think has some of that in some of the things he's done. And anyway, this one's called Country Dog. Kind of a little shout out to this dog I used to have when I was a kid named Snoots, and she was an outdoor dog, you know. So Country Dog.
Right.